Scott Sadler. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, please.
2 minutes it is.
We ask this court to reverse Mr. Sadler's conviction for 3 reasons. First, the exclusion of defense evidence violated his constitutional right to present a complete defense. Second, because improper opinion testimony invaded the province of the jury. Third, because prosecutorial misconduct during closing argument deprived him of a fair trial. Alone or cumulatively, these errors require reversal of the conviction. Additionally, we ask the court to strike 2 overly broad conditions of community custody that violate his fundamental constitutional rights. When a defendant offers relevant evidence at his criminal trial, the burden is on the state to show the evidence is, quote, so prejudicial as to disrupt the fairness of the trial. That's from State v. Jones, Washington Supreme Court case from 2010, quoting a much older case, State v. Darden. And now the state suggests in its briefing that if we accept that rule, that that prejudice is required to overcome the admission of relevant defense evidence, that it somehow means that the rules of evidence just don't apply to criminal defendants. But that's not what it means at all. What it means is, if we look back at the cases underlying Jones, what it means is that under Chambers v. Mississippi, a United States Supreme Court case from 1973, the evidence rules may not be mechanistically applied to defeat the ends of justice. And when we look back at Rock v. Arkansas in 1987, those restrictions, even when they're based on the evidence rules, may not be arbitrary or disproportionate to the purposes that they're designed to serve.
Can I, just to get the record straight, there was a motion in limine regarding a number of these emails, and there's one email that's attached to Mr. Sadler's brief that is labeled email 16. The record shows that the court admitted that, but I could not find it as an exhibit. Do you know if email 16 was admitted, or do you? Is that?
I don't recall, Your Honor. It's not one of the ones that we're challenging as having been excluded.
Okay.
The specific ones that we're arguing about were labeled email number 1, number 9, parts of number 10, parts of number 14, and number 15. I believe 16 was admitted, or at least parts of it were.
Okay. But 16 and 15 overlapped.
They overlapped,
right.
Yes.
Okay, so 16 was admitted. All right.
It's my recollection that 15 was excluded, but 16, at least major parts of it, were admitted.
Okay. And another question. Exhibit 56 was offered by the state. It was a compilation of a number of the ads that Mr. Sadler had posted. It was identified by the state, offered by the defendant, accepted. And then, as I understand it, it was withdrawn by Mr. Sadler.
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. And I believe it was withdrawn in part because some of these emails were excluded. And so it was withdrawn after the ruling on this issue.
Okay.
Where does the right to present a defense end and the court's discretion over cumulative evidence begin?
I don't think there's a hard and fast line. Under Jones, appellate courts engage in de novo review, and even trial courts should be engaging in a balancing test. Jones talks about balancing the defendant's need for the evidence against prejudice to the state or disruption to the fairness of the trial. And that's what the court really failed to appreciate here is, first of all, the defendant's need for this evidence, and second of all, the lack of any prejudice or problem to the fairness of the trial. The only disputed issue in this case was Mr. Sadler's mental state, his intent in exchanging these emails, whether or not he believed he was actually communicating with a 15-year-old girl rather than a King County police detective.
Well, his theory was that he was trying to establish a long-term relationship with an adult female. I mean, that was the point that he was trying to get across.
That he was also open to a casual relationship with someone, if that was also what was happening. But the problem is that the state was arguing that he was specifically online trolling for minors.
Right.
And these excluded emails show that even though his advertisements may have suggested young or described explicit sexual activity, that he was in fact engaging in these conversations showing his intent to engage in some sort of a long-term dedicated relationship.
And weren't emails admitted that showed that he was communicating with older women, and that he had expressed a desire for a monogamous relationship and long-term relationships, and desired to be in a relationship where he could have children with this person. And those emails were, the emails that were admitted did express that sentiment, did it not?
Very, very, very briefly and minorly, I guess I would say.
So your argument is that more of it should have been admitted.
The vast majority of the emails that would have shown, that discussed family, that discussed a long-term relationship, that discussed monogamy, the vast majority of that was excluded to focus on. The court specifically found that that theory was somehow irrelevant or misleading. And so it was only admitting the emails that were showing his attempts to ferret out the identity of the person, or that were showing an interest in role-playing. The court expressly said that this whole theory of his intent to form a more substantial relationship was irrelevant or misleading.
And but, so the, but the evidence, that was you don't dispute that evidence showing those things was admitted, though.
A couple of the emails that mentioned that briefly were among the ones that were admitted.
Why would not additional emails to that effect be cumulative evidence?
Part of what the court did was it excluded even parts of emails where that was part of the context. For example, in the in email number one that we're challenging, the court specifically excluded the phrase that he was wanting a live-in relationship.
But so there even was evidence admitted to that effect, was there not? Even email number four, I think, or exhibit number four, which was the ad, did not that also discuss a live-in relationship?
Yes. But part of the state's theory was that this was actually just somehow a cover for what he really was doing, which was trolling the internet for underage prostitutes. And so showing that in each of these cases where he was allegedly doing that, he was actually engaging in these conversations indicating something very different, was still extremely crucial to presenting his full and complete defense. He needed the context for these emails, and it was these very relevant aspects of that context that the court excluded.
But he did have enough evidence to argue this during closing.
He could argue it, and I would point the court to State v. Jones, where the court talked about the defendant in that case could argue consent, but he wasn't allowed to present the circumstances under which the sexual activity occurred. Obviously, this is not as extreme as Jones, but it's analogous in the sense that he argued that this was his intent, but he wasn't allowed to present the full context of these emails so that he could present a complete defense. And then when we look at his need for it and we balance it against the prejudice, there simply isn't any. This was a few more emails, a few more lines from a few more emails, and any prejudice could have been mitigated by a limiting instruction.
All right, thank you.
We'll reserve the remainder. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Dennis McCurdy for the State of Washington, the respondent in this case. Charged with attempted commercial sex abuse of a minor and a minor, or communicating with a minor for moral purposes, 3 days of sexually charged communications over the internet with somebody the state asserted the defendant knew as a juvenile 15-year-old named Jen. Now, part of the defense theory was this, he's looking for a long-term relationship. But he also even testified in his ad support that he's looking for casual sex, he was looking into role-playing, he was looking into paying for sex, and he also said he was getting caught up in the investigation and trying to get frauds off of the internet. There were 17 email strings he sought to admit, and only one was refused admission, the court refused admission, and four were redacted. Now, there's two aspects of this issue that I think that are important. First one's somewhat, quite frankly, a pet peeve of mine, and that is that this has become an issue du jour, that any time any evidence is excluded, the claim is it's a violation of due process. And the defendant's rule, this is a quote from the brief, is to protect the right of an accused person to defend themselves. Relevant evidence must be admissible unless the state can show a compelling interest to exclude it. That simply is not the rule. That's one sentence from one case, but that's not what the rule. If that was the rule, then this case should be overturned, because there wasn't a compelling interest to exclude that evidence. Under the standard rules of evidence, there seldom is a compelling state interest, and the courts never said that you have to have that. Taylor v. Illinois says an accused does not have an unfettered right to offer testimony that is incompetent, privileged, or otherwise inadmissible under the standard rules of evidence. What I think needs to happen
is... Why was the evidence inadmissible? It was in support of the theory, at least one theory, that the defendant wanted to argue at trial.
Sure.
It rebutted the state's theory that he was trolling for minors. So.
Well, but let me take the second part of that first. The state's theory was not that he was simply on the Internet to troll for minors. That was not the state's theory. That's part of what we said he was doing. But we are also fully acknowledged that he's on the Internet. I mean, he posted over 100 ads. They were not admitted. He withdrew them. But he testified that he, in fact, had 100 ads on different sex sites, on some of them that had to do with fetishes, some of them that had to do with bondage. It wasn't that he was just looking for juveniles. He was doing that, too. So I just want to make sure that wasn't the whole theory of the case. But, yes, it also did support his theory. But minimal relevance, or you asked the reason for it. The trial court said it was cumulative, it was hearsay, and it could confuse the jurors. Now, that kind of gets into the factual aspect of this, too. And that is, but before I get to that, what I'm asking the court to do, and I'd love to see an opinion out there that says, look, the defense has to at least articulate what that threshold is before an evidence rule is turned into a constitutional violation. It's not acceptable or shouldn't be acceptable to this court to simply say evidence was excluded, gosh, it was important, it's a violation of due process.
How about full and complete defense?
That's what I think the U.S. Supreme Court cases have stated, and that's what I've cited in my brief. I cited, I don't know, half a dozen different cases that say the U.S. Supreme Court has said you have to be prevented from putting on a defense. For example, there was one of the cases, and it might have been Taylor v. Illinois, I'm not sure, but there was a court rule in whatever state it came from that said a co-defendant cannot be called to testify for the other defendant, whether they're in trial together or whether they're not. And in the particular case, the co-defendant was going to say, the defendant had nothing to do with the crime, but there was a blanket rule that said that's not allowed. Court said, no, that rule is, you can't have that rule. That does violate the Constitution because he was not able to present his defense because the only one who could testify to that was his co-defendant. That's the type of thing that you have to meet a certain level before you can argue constitutional error.
What if your defense is, your full and complete defense is, here's a pattern of conduct by myself that's inconsistent with the state's, what I perceive to be the state's theory. And so you've let me put in three bits and pieces. I can't establish my full and complete defense because I can't reveal my pattern of conduct because you're redacting chunks left and right.
That's getting there. That is articulating an argument that says this wasn't enough. I couldn't present my defense because there was just these small snippets of information that was allowed to come in. That's at least arguing that you were actually prevented from putting forth your defense. Now, that's not the case here. It's not even comes close to the case because, like I said, you've got 17 email strings that were omitted. The other thing is you have to go back to also the rules of evidence as well. What is it about those emails that has to be similar to the email with Jen, the person he thought was Jen? If it's intended to show a long-term relationship, that's what he wanted, then what you're going to have to do is have a similar email string that talks about bondage, that talks about having sex for money, and still having the defendant somehow have proof that, in fact, in that other case, he was looking for a long-term relationship as well. And because if they're not similar, if the discussion is completely different, then that doesn't show in this case that that's what he was doing. If he's not offering the other person money for sex, if he's not saying, trying to figure out how old she is, that sort of thing, there has to be similarities. Another critical aspect.
Isn't that up to you, up to the state to argue? If his evidence doesn't cover all of the elements you're looking at, That's something you can argue, but why would that prevent him from putting in his line of argument?
Well, it's not preventing him from putting in his line of argument, but the rule for the admission of evidence is the similarities between the one act that you're trying to get in versus the criminal act must have substantial similarities. Another aspect of it that doesn't exist here, those email strings don't have the ad that you posted. Now, if the ad that you posted for these emails that you wanted in said, hey, I'm a nice 57-year-old guy. I'm looking for a long-term relationship. That's very different from the ad in this case where he talked about wanting to have somebody that was youngish, 18-ish, and talking about fetishes and bondage. Excuse me just a moment. We don't have that. He did not attach the ad to that. If you don't have those similarities, it's not admissible, and that doesn't rise to a constitutional violation. It is simply an abuse of discretion under an evidence rule standard, 404, 403, 402, 401. And the defendant can't show that no reasonable judge would have ruled in the state's favor. That's all this case is about. That's all that evidence issue is about. If the court doesn't have any other questions about any of the other issues or this issue, I'm going to ask the court to affirm. Thank you.
Thank you.
I just have a few brief points in rebuttal, Your Honor. Turning to the question of sufficient similarity between these previous emails, I would ask the court to look at the subject lines of the excluded emails. Many of them refer to young or 18-ish or also contain explicit depictions, the same type of language that he was using in the charged incident in this case. Second, turning to the objection that this was hearsay, this is offered to show the defendant's state of mind. It falls under the exception under Evidence Rule 803A3 for declarations regarding a then-existing state of mind. And finally, I think the threshold that we're looking at here is the standard described in Jones. We're balancing the defendant's need for this evidence against prejudice to the fairness of the trial. And yes, the evidence rules are designed to protect the fairness of the trial. So it makes sense that many times you would have a compelling interest when you have a violation of the rules of evidence. But not every time. We have to look underneath that at the purposes that the rule serves. And in this case, the defense needed this evidence to present a full and complete defense. And the parts that were excluded were no more confusing or misleading than other parts that were admitted, so there's no prejudice there. There could have been a limiting instruction that juries are presumed to be able to follow in case there was a worry about any confusion or misleading nature.
So in your view, were all of the emails that were offered by the defendant, all of those should have been admitted, and is that the only way he could have presented a complete defense?
There may have been some small portions of it that wouldn't have mattered if they had excluded them, but the court sort of across the board tried to exclude anything that showed him looking for a long-term stable relationship, and we believe that prevented him from presenting his defense.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.